C7. Number 19A.
Yes. You know, Pignoliang used to call that in a very few words. He used to say, be and by being heal the sick. Be and by being, not change it anymore, you heal the sick. Yeah. Or he said, being is healing. This is this third part of the chapter. But it's only the third part. It's not the whole chapter, not the whole textbook. But it's quite a nice, short statement to pinpoint this attitude. Yes. We come to the fourth part of that chapter. It is that part which has the title Mental Treatment Illustrated. And Mr. Dolly showed how here Mrs. Eddy presents how the first, second, and third part of love, truth, life is reflected, spirit, in the patient. So he has the great overall tone of love, truth, life, and spirit, meaning here he depicts now the standpoint of the patient. It's no more so much the standpoint of the practitioner, and showing how the treatment affects itself, has an effect on the patient. So that we have here spirit as a reflection of love, truth, and life. What is the sense of oneness, therefore? The sense of oneness, therefore, would show that love, truth, and life, those first three parts, are universally reflected and therefore bring about the health of every situation. If it is reflected, that means, what is the reflection? The reflection, therefore, is the idea of life, the idea of love, truth, and life. That is the reflection, and that is the health of my countenance, of my God. When we consider, therefore, this reflection, therefore, at the point of the patient, we find here the final statement as she goes through the stages, that she finally says, disease was never there. Can you see? She brings it to the point of showing that if we have only that sense of love, truth, and life as infinitely reflected, therefore the reflection is idea, therefore we will never see disease. The concept comes up, disease was never there. You see, it isn't showing disease was healed. This heals disease. In the reflection, the purity of the reflection, we just can't see the possibility of there being any disease, of there to be any problem. It is then just contemplating the calculus of spirit from the point of view of love, truth, and life. Therefore, she makes here that statement that if spirit, you see, that's the focal point, or the power of divine love bear witness to the truth, this is the ultimatum, the scientific way, life, and the healing is instantaneous. So, in the words of this sentence, you really have, if spirit at the point of reflection is reflecting the power of love, giving witness to the truth, this is the method, the way, the true method of life, and the healing is instantaneous because disease was never there. Can you hear the rather high tone that she brings in here to show the oneness of being. There is not a truth being applied to a disease. That would be duality. Therefore, as long as we think that we can apply love, truth, and life to something outside of being, we have a sense of duality. Can you therefore also see that question that comes up over and over, that say, how can we apply this system of Christian Science? How can we apply the chart? How can we apply the matrix? How can we apply the structure? How can we apply? It's a wrong question. The moment we think about applying, we have a duality. We have somewhere a truth that should be applied to something which is not right, and that's a sense of duality. It's therefore there where Mrs. Eddy has to take in the question of argumentation and says, actually, argumentation is that way. It's trying to knock down an error on a dualistic basis. She says argumentation is only then necessary when the student is not perfectly attuned with divine science. Then he needs the method of argumentation. When therefore there is still that sense of a dualism, of a true idea, of a truth, and on the other hand, an error, a disease, a body, a person, then you use the method of argumentation. And therefore that is not really a true scientific method. See, she says, what is argumentation? She says, it's arraying your mental plea against the physical. And you have against, you have an opposite. You have something opposed to. And so argumentation is only possible as long as we still have a sense of dualism within our consciousness. Yes. So actually we can see that for love, truth, and life, there is nothing to be practiced on. You cannot take love, truth, and life and practice on something. Love, truth, and life can only be reflected, can only see as the idea of love, truth, and life. And that is seeing that the disease was never there. And this is the answer. And this is all in this wonderful fourth part and brought out there. Yes. All right. So, as a whole, we have seen that here understanding and demonstration is one, and from that higher standpoint, we have considered those four different aspects, and also considered a little bit the four different way of how the law runs through the seven. It's naturally absolutely difficult to put that into one law because it's so big. So the law would state, actually, the law which we could put down would be understanding God. Understanding God and demonstration is one. I'm a bit hesitant of going through this law because it has so many aspects. Perhaps the thing one has to see is that it's not just saying understanding and demonstration is one. It's actually saying that understanding the wholeness of God, the wholeness of God, is actually the demonstration, namely, is the wholeness of man. I think this is perhaps stating the law much clearer, that if we would say understanding the wholeness of God is the wholeness of men. whereby the wholeness of men naturally would be the demonstration. So let me be honest about this elaboration of the law, because we have four different laws in those four parts. If I try now to pull all that together into one law, I have no textual authority. Up to this point, I was always showing you the laws and going through the seven. I had always more or less textual authority what I was saying. Here I don't have it. So we can say to ourselves, well, all right, we don't have textual authority, but we have the authority of the seven synonymous terms. And the law certainly is right. Those two scriptural notes have shown us that if we understand the wholeness of God, that we have the wholeness of man, thy countenance is whole, so that we could try once to elaborate it from our point of view, and just try to elaborate it and say, what is now understanding the wholeness of God in regard to practice? We would have to have that in view, in regard to practice. So what could we perhaps show as understanding of God in practice? I think we could here put in that it shows that mind is the only medicine. That would be perhaps in practice the point. That mind is the true medicine, and that would be now the second column. Oh, yeah. Did I say we actually have to have now two columns, huh? The one column is the understanding of the wholeness of God, and the second column would be the wholeness of man. Sorry that I missed that. So these would be the two columns. You can make two columns. The one is the understanding of the wholeness of God, and the second column, the health of man or the wholeness of man. So we can ask ourselves in a summarizing way, mind as the medicine, as the true medicine, is actually showing the understanding of God as mind, as the only medicine. That is the wholeness of God. And that would precipitate itself as the wholeness of man would say, well, that is that medicine of mind is that which actually supports, maintains the health of man. Mind would perhaps say, this maintains the health of man. This maintains a healthy state. Can you see the point? The point is, we say, where does disease come from? It comes from mortal mind. Mortal mind makes man diseased. The fact would be that we see that what mind entertains in his consciousness, mind's idea, is actually that medicine, medium, substance that keeps man constantly healthy. That if I roam in the realm of the one mind, that is my constant medicine in the positive sense, a constant medicine that keeps my state of being intact, healthy. It maintains me. Or if we go to spirit and see in healing what kind of a medium, what kind of a nature do I apply in healing, I could see, well, spirit is actually the only medium, the only nature, the only means which I apply. I apply only the spiritual. And so what would it do to my state of health? Spirit would always fortify my body, would always strengthen my body, would always give the true substance to my body. And I feel that if I understand spirit, then I'm always strong and have the right kind of substance to sustain my state of health. If I take soul in regard to healing, always in regard to healing, I would perhaps see, well, that soul is always the truth giver, the truth shower, the truth testifier. I would always ask soul how healthy I am, and not the body. Soul would be that which is showing me the true symptoms, and says, soul would say, you know, the symptoms are that you are wonderful, in a wonderful state of things. I testify for your absolute wholeness and integrity. So soul is that which tells me about the true symptoms, which would have as a demonstration, really, that I would see this would free me entirely of listening to material symptoms, of taking into account material symptoms, sense testimony, material testimony. This would free me of all that. I get into a state of being freed from sense testimony and material symptoms. See that even if the material symptoms on a material level say, oh, you are such and such and such, I would not take that into account, because soul would tell me the symptoms that I see is that I know you to be sinless, to be free from mortality. I know you as a perfect state of things, and I would ask soul what kind of symptoms soul would give me. And soul would say to me, you know, you are in your full state of the spiritual senses. You listen to the spiritual sense and not to anything else. You are therefore absolutely fine. You have an inner balance. You have an inner integrity. That are my symptoms. So don't look to the symptoms of the body. So I ask soul as the truth giver. Or if I go to principle and ask, what does principle say about my state of health? And in regard to healing, I would see, oh, principle is constantly operating. He's the operator. He's the surgeon. He's the doctor, so to say. Principle always practices on me. That I would see. He always doctors me. If you put that into quotes. He always doctors me. He always practices on me, that principle. And even I could see he practices on my whole system, on my entire system. So therefore I would see as demonstration that that keeps my bodily system intact, that keeps my bodily system well organized, so that my organism are under the system of principle and are well organized. Because organs are nothing else but the counterfeit of a system. It's a self-operative system in the material. Or if I take life, I perhaps would say, what does mean the understanding of the wholeness of God? And as life, I perhaps would see, oh, life is that infinite life giver, the life preserver. It's really that impulsion, the constant impulsion, the split-second impulsion of giving life and newness of life. And therefore, what do I experience in the as demonstration? As demonstration, I think I would experience the constant renewal of my body, the the constant freshness and refreshing of my body, so that it reacts against decay and aging, that this keeps me young and vital. That's how it demonstrates itself. I think our vitality comes from the terrific sense. Do I have enough understanding of the constant spontaneity of life? That constant willingness to adapt myself to the new situation, not to get rigid, not to get into a routine, not to get rusty, spiritually rusty, not to get into a same state of repeating truth, but that wonderful sense, always to approach the subject of Christian Science from a new angle. And not to say, I have been devoting now so and so many years on Christian Science, I know now something about it, and nobody can teach me anything anymore now, I'm now really a master at it. This is routine, this gets rusty. I should feel that every day I get up, I feel, I wonder what it's all about with that Christian Science. What is it all about? What is really the pith of it? What is actually the main point about it? To refresh oneself always by seeing there must be a new aspect to it. And that's life. Or there will never be a development. There will never be a progression in Christian Science. So, that keeps the body young, that keeps the body vital, that keeps our mentality vital. The worst thing is that we get into ruts. Or, in truth, naturally, in the way of healing, we would see that truth is the only remedy. I think that would be the big point. And as the only remedy, remedy means the truth about the situation. That's the remedy. We remedy anything, not only the body, but the business or whatever it is, by the truth we project into it. So it forms in the human as demonstration. It forms a consciousness of health. It maintains my dominion over everything, over my life, over my destiny, over my body. See? It should give us some kind of dominion, that remedy. Or if we take love, naturally love from the positive point of view as the healer would be the savior and the salvation, love salvation, meaning that love has a terrific teleological plan to work out. He wants us to save us. Love wants that we are saved. And so this frees me completely from that sense of fear, that I fear that I could be led into a life which may end somewhere in a dead end, which has no fruition, which is a frustration, which is hopeless, which is full of condemnation and destruction and so on. I free myself from all that, and I feel no, because I have an understanding of love's plan, of the goal causality and the goal directedness of love. I see, then therefore I can trust that everything that happens every day is somehow geared into that plan and into that direction, and just works and works until it finds it right place value in the whole pattern of my life. So it's not always necessary that we know right from the beginning when the plan begins to operate, that we know right from the beginning it's all its details. What we have to know, not all its details right from the beginning, we only have to know the law of creativity, how starting from mind it begins to unfold through spirit, and it begins to bring out its identity and say, now that identity operates by itself and something begins to operate in principle and suddenly brings out the newness of the whole idea, the Eureka state, and that dish can afterwards be seen as being the proof of the pudding and seen that it has found its true place value in the plan. And only then at the end I see, now I have the plan now. I can see now the detail in the plan. First, I only see that there is a plan. It is important to know because the human mind is built that way, that the human mind would like to know right from the beginning every detail how it's going to unfold. And as long as it doesn't know every detail how it's going to unfold and what will be the exact form and outcome of it, the exact truth and love of it, they begin to have fear and hesitate and be frustrated and I don't know what, you see. And so, but if one knows the law of creativity, the law of the days of creation, one is trusting that law and goes along that law, knowing right from the beginning that the end is embedded in the beginning, is inborn in the beginning. And so here we would have no fear. Yes, that would be the 12th chapter. Now, if we look at the whole vertical of the Christianity, perhaps we can see that we were dealing just with one universe, that there is only one universe. Perhaps you can write there in Christianity, only one universe. So the focal point was on that universe, how? At the point of creation, it was stating there is only one universe, namely the universe of idea, but the universe of idea of the Infinite One. So it was stating there is an idea, a universe of idea of the Infinite One. In the 10th chapter, then it would show that this universe of idea evolves, has one evolution, and that there is no other evolution going on. Then, in objections answered, it would show that this one universe is an infinite reflection of all ideas. And you get the realm of that Christianity as Christianity, the realm of those ideas as an infinite reflection of each idea with every other idea. When we have reflection, we have understanding, and everything becomes transparent and clear. We have understanding, and so the 12th chapter showed that that universe of understanding, all the ideas, knowing what the ideas are, therefore praising God through an understanding of God is demonstration. That understanding, the universe of idea, is demonstrating the universe of idea. So that understanding and demonstration is one, too. And so the whole vertical column there has just its terrific focal point of on idea, but never on idea as isolated, always as the idea of the Infinite One. It's never separate.